Hello, it's Dave Bunnell again. We're continuing a study through the book of Daniel in the Old Testament. This is the study of chapter 2. If you missed the study of chapter 1, it should be available on the same website through which you're hearing this one. If you want to hear that first, it'll give you more of a foundation. But you can also just listen to this one straight through. We're going to look at the second chapter of the book of Daniel, where we see God continue to be faithful to Daniel, who had committed himself to follow God even in a pagan culture that was trying to force him to abandon the true and living God of his fathers. And we're going to see God creating a situation by which Daniel, for his faithfulness, can receive honor. We're going to see God create a situation in which the king is going to need Daniel's help and is going to be given enough wisdom from God in how to handle a situation that leads to the king honoring Daniel. This pagan king is going to exalt and honor the true and living God because of Daniel, his slave's faithfulness. And that's what we'll see happen here. Let's just begin reading together. If you have a Bible handy, go ahead and get your own out. Read along. That'll increase the effectiveness of your being able to understand what is being said to you by the Lord. And if not, just try to listen closely as I read it to you. We're reading from the second chapter of the book of Daniel here. It says, in the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar, that's the king, had dreams that troubled him, and sleep deserted him. So the king gave orders to summon the diviner priests, mediums, sorcerers, and Chaldeans to tell the king his dreams. When they came and stood before the king, he said to them, I have had a dream, and am anxious to understand it. The Chaldeans spoke to the king, may the king live forever! Tell your servants the dream, and we will give the interpretation. The king replied to the Chaldeans, my word is final. If you don't tell me the dream and its interpretation, you will be torn limb from limb, and your houses will be made a garbage dump. But if you make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you'll receive gifts, a reward, and great honor from me. So make the dream and its interpretation known to me. They answered a second time, may the king tell the dream to his servants, and we will give the interpretation. The king replied, I know for certain you are trying to gain some time, because you see that my word is final. If you don't tell me the dream, there is one decree for you. You have conspired to tell me something false or fraudulent until the situation changes. So tell me the dream, and I will know you can give me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king, no one on earth can make known what the king requests. Consequently, no king, however great and powerful, has ever asked anything like this of any diviner priest, medium, or Chaldean. What the king is asking is so difficult that no one can make it known to him except the gods, whose dwelling is not with mortals. Because of this, the king became violently angry and gave orders to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. The decree was issued that the wise men were to be executed, and they searched for Daniel and his friends to execute them. Here we have this pagan king being given a dream that we're going to find out came directly from the God of heaven to him. You know, God could have given this dream to his prophet Daniel and had him say it, but God had other plans. He gave it instead to the pagan king so that his name could be honored, as all of this leadership in this pagan kingdom could see that God was God. He gave the dream instead to him so that Daniel could later come and give and tell him the dream and interpret it. I can remember my Sunday school lessons when I was a kid, and it was probably not the teacher's fault, but my own fault. I remember as a child hearing this story, and my impression when I had heard the story was that the king couldn't remember what he had dreamed, but that he was disturbed by it, and so he was telling them that you have to tell me what the dream is and tell me the interpretation. I remember I had that misunderstanding of what happened here, but this is a troubling dream, and the king remembers very well what the dream is, but he's been given some wisdom from God about what he is to demand. He might have done the unwise thing and gone and told them, "This is my dream, tell me what it means." Who knows what they would have told him what it means? They would have told him anything. They wouldn't have known what it meant. They didn't know the true and living God, and they couldn't tell him what the dream meant. Even if they did know what the dream was, they wouldn't have been able to give him the proper interpretation. And here this pagan king has been given wisdom that he didn't really ask for, but God's purpose was that he would have it. Wisdom to know how they could prove that they were qualified to give the interpretation. And that is, they had to have knowledge beyond that available to man in order to give the interpretation of this dream. Nebuchadnezzar knew that this dream had in some way come from God. And somebody had to have knowledge from God to give the interpretation to him. And so he was requiring them to do what only God could do. In order to prove that they could give the interpretation, they had to prove it by having knowledge of what the dream really was. He's very troubled by it. And so in verse 2, he gathers together his whole religious system, all the diviner priests, all the mediums or psychics or sorcerers, people that talk to the dead, people that cast spells, people that do witchcraft, people that are into every form of pagan rituals and religions, and just everybody, all of the different portions of this false religious system of Babylon, he gathers them together and says to them, "I want the interpretation of the dream." And they say, "Tell us the dream and we'll tell you the interpretation." And he tells them, "Look, I have told you what it's going to be. Like Dr. Seuss, I meant what I said and I said what I meant." He's saying, this is how it's going to be. My word is final. You will not just tell me the interpretation, but first you'll tell me what it was I dreamed. And then I'll know that you're qualified to tell me the interpretation. He says, "Furthermore, if you don't do it, and you prove yourself to be the frauds that I think you are, by failing to do this for me, I'm going to have you killed. I'm going to turn your houses into a garbage heap where everybody else can throw their refuse. I'm going to put you to death. I'm going to tear you apart." Literally, the Aramaic that verse was written in, it says, "I'm going to make you into a pile of limbs," like I'm going to tear you limb from limb, "and leave your house as a garbage dump. That's what I'm going to do to you if you don't obey me by telling me what I dreamed and what it meant." He says, "But on the other hand, if you do tell me, if you do prove that this religious system I'm part of and my nation is part of, if you do show me that it's real by telling me the dream and its interpretation, I'm going to highly reward you. You're going to be given great honor." Now see, this was God at work. God wanted influence and power and honor to come to him and to his man, Daniel, and his friends, the servants of the true and living God. So he puts it into this pagan king's heart to put this test out there. Any of these ones who claim to have some special spiritual knowledge, if they don't really, put them to death. And if they do, give them honor. This is God's plan to raise Daniel to an even higher place of honor than he'd already been raised to in chapter 1. And by doing so, glorifying his own name through his servant Daniel. And so they plead with the king, "Oh, please, just tell us the dream and we'll give it the interpretation." And the king reveals to them, "I know that what you're doing is conspiring against me. I know that you're planning to lie to me about what the dream means. If you really could tell me what the dream means, then you could tell me what the dream is," which is true. You know, they used to have this psychic hotline with Dionne Warwick. It went bankrupt, and if she'd been psychic, she'd have seen that coming. But I had a friend that was on the phone with one of them one time, and they were asking for the payment, and he said, "You tell me my credit card number, and then I'll let you tell me what my future holds." And, you know, Arsenio Hall used to make the joke about it, too. "What's this with the psychic hotline?" I remember him saying on his show. "If you need a psychic, shouldn't they call you?" You know, that's just humorous ways of looking at some of this stuff. But there's real truth to that. If this group of Nebuchadnezzar's day's psychics could tell what the dream meant, they could also tell what the dream was, if they had such qualifications. So he says, "I know you're trying to conspire against me, and you're just stalling for time, and you just better tell me everything I'm telling you to tell me, or else you prove yourself to be the frauds that I think you are." He's very angered at their response. Now, in verses 10 and 11, their response is very reasonable and very true. They plead with the king, saying, "No one can do what you're requesting. No one has ever gone to a psychic or a diviner priest or a medium or a Chaldean and demanded this of him. The most powerful kings that have ever been have never asked such hard things of their counselors, because it's impossible to do this." And you know what? They're right. It is impossible for the gods of this world to do such a thing. It is impossible for false religious leaders to make such promises and deliver on them. It is impossible for Islam to deliver a man from lust in his heart. So they have to force the woman to dress in these ridiculous curtain-like outfits that cover everything but their eyes, or even their eyes too. And it still doesn't work. It still won't make the man not lust. It is impossible for the psychic fortune teller to tell you the truth about your future and give you good guidance that'll help you make a decision. It is impossible for the Orthodox or Roman Catholic priest to absolve you of your sins when you go to them to confess. It is impossible for the religious systems created by man in this world to do the things that only God can do. But it's not impossible for the true and living God to do any of these things. Anyway, verse 13 comes down. It says, "The decree was issued that the wise men were to be executed, and they searched for Daniel and his friends to execute them." Now, searching for Daniel and his friends was the right thing to do, but to execute them is the wrong thing to do. They're not part of this, the religious system. You notice they hadn't been brought before the king, because he was bringing all the sorcerers and mediums and Chaldeans and all of his religious system before him, making this challenge. But they're some of the ones that have that position of wise men in Israel, or in the kingdom. They're just from Israel and worship Israel's God. You see, this challenge that was given to all the sorcerers and all the others, it hasn't been placed before the God who is the source of the dream yet. But in his anger, the king says, "Put them all to death." Verse 14, we pick up the story. "Then Daniel responded with tact and discretion to Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, who had gone out to execute the wise men of Babylon. He asked Arioch, the king's officer, 'Why is the decree from the king so harsh?' Then Arioch explained the situation to Daniel. So Daniel went and asked the king to give him some time so that he could give the king the interpretation. See, Daniel is just not trying to deceive the king. He's just trying to let the king understand. He's basically sending the message to Arioch and to the king. Look, what's all the panic? Why be so harsh? Of course it's impossible for your gods to do these things. Of course your gods can't tell you what the dream was and what it meant. No surprise. But my god can. This isn't... The things that are impossible for your gods aren't even difficult for my god. This is easy for him. Just let me say, take some time. I talk with him all the time. Every day I talk with him. I'll just go do that. We'll go with my friends who also know him. We'll pray together. He will come through for us, just as he has before, just as he will again. And we can trust him. And just give me some time, and then I'll come and tell you the dream that my God gave you and what it meant and what he was trying to say to you. Don't worry. It's okay. Daniel's not even afraid. He's not even wondering if what he says is true. He's not even worried. Because he's a man of faith who understands who his God is. You know, we all need to come to this point where Daniel is in Daniel chapter 2. God has been faithful to us before. If you are listening to this because you're among those of us who know him. And by the way, if you don't know him, if you don't know for sure that your sins are forgiven and you're on your way to heaven, I'm not going to talk extensively about that in today's study, but contact me through the website. If you want to know how it is that you can know God and go to heaven and know that all your sins are forgiven and you have a right relationship with him through faith in Christ, contact me. I'll be happy to share with you about this. I'll call you on the phone, email you, whatever you want me to do. But now back to the study for today, for those of us that already know him. We all need to come to this point in our lives, in our walk of faith with God, where we trust God that much that we're willing to make promises on his behalf without fear. Not false promises, not things he hasn't said he will do, but things that he has said he will do that we can make assurances to people that he will. And know that he will. You know, if you know God the way Daniel knew his God, then you know God is trustworthy and that you can afford to be associated with him. You can afford to be known as a man who trusts in him because you know that he's not going to let you down. There's that gospel song that has the words that says, he'll do it again. Yes, he'll do it again. Just take a look at where you are now and where you have been. Oh, hasn't he always come through for you? He's the same now as then. You may not know how and you may not know when, but he'll do it again. And the words of that song are true. And you need to come to the point where you trust God in that way, where you know that what he's done before and what he's capable of doing, he's going to do every time. And that is, he's going to be an ever-present help in time of trouble. That every time you need him, he's going to come through for you. Every single time you call upon him, he's going to be there to hear and answer and help. And every time you face a new situation, you can know that he's going to be trustworthy, that he's going to be there for you. That's where Daniel is right now. He's saying, give me time, I'll go talk to my God. It's impossible for your God, Nebuchadnezzar, but this is easy for mine. Just trust in him as I do. Give me some time. I'll go talk to him. He'll come through for me. I'll give you what you're asking for, your dream and its interpretation. Daniel's not thinking in the back of his mind, but what if God doesn't do it? Daniel's palms are not sweating. His voice is not shaking. He's not getting a little nauseated feeling in his stomach. He's not saying with his words, "My God will succeed in helping me," and thinking in the back of his mind, "I sure hope so anyway, because I'm dead without it." He's not saying, "My God will help me," and in the back of his mind praying to God, "You will, won't you? Or am I making a mistake to trust in you?" You see, it's not a mistake to trust in God. We will not be disappointed when we put our hope and our trust in Him. Daniel knows that he knows that he knows that he knows that. That's where you and I need to get to in our walk with Him. We need to be able to make God, to present God to the unbelieving world as just and wonderful as He is. We're not going to have an effective ministry to the homeless if we don't believe that God can transform the homeless person's life and make that person a productive member of society. We're not going to have an effective ministry to those that are enslaved to drugs and alcohol if we don't believe in our hearts that God can deliver them from those addictions. We're not going to have an effective ministry to men that are steeped in perversion and various forms of sin that are holding strongly onto their lives if we don't believe that God can set them free. We're not going to be able to have an effective ministry to the woman who's chronically depressed if we don't believe that God can give her a hope and bring about whatever changes are necessary in her heart and in her life that she becomes someone that smiles instead of whines and frowns and is in despair. We're going to have an effective ministry to these people if we can go to them and with our whole hearts and say, "My God will provide for your needs. He will protect you. He will help you. He will see you through." All the while knowing in the back of our minds, yes, He will. He will do everything that I'm promising on His behalf. Now, a caution here, that doesn't mean you promise things that He hasn't promised on His behalf. That doesn't mean you create your own prophetic words for their lives that didn't come from Him, that just came from your own desires. It doesn't mean you promise somebody their disease is going to be healed if God hasn't told you it is. It doesn't mean you promise somebody that they're going to get rich if they send money into your ministry. God hasn't promised any such thing, and you're not telling them the truth if you promise them that. But the things that God has said in His Word and has said in your heart by His Spirit as you know His voice and walk with Him, you can trust Him to do as He has said. And you don't have to fear to tell others about how great God is and how He can do these things. So Daniel gets the time, gets favor from God in the eyes of the king long enough to take time to go to God. Verse 17, "Then Daniel went to his house and told his friends Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah about the matter." These are the same three men that in their Babylonian names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. "Urging them to ask the God of heaven for mercy concerning this ministry, so Daniel and his friends would not be killed with the rest of Babylon's wise men." See, that sentence is on the rest of Babylon's wise men because they are the frauds that Nebuchadnezzar thought they were. And this is prayer for the God of heaven that these ones are the wise men who follow the true and living God would be spared by God showing mercy and giving what the king has demanded. And they're trusting God to do that. Verse 19, "The mystery was then revealed to Daniel in a vision at night." See, God came through. And Daniel praised the God of heaven and declared, "May the name of God be praised forever and ever, for wisdom and power belong to him. He changes the times and seasons. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals the deep and hidden things." That's because nothing's hidden from him. "He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. I offer thanks and praise to you, God of my fathers, because you have given me wisdom and power, and you have now let me know what we asked of you, for you have let us know the king's mystery." Daniel knows what the king dreamed. King didn't tell him, God did. He knows what the dream means. Not even the king knows that yet. Only God did. But God has revealed it to Daniel. You see, you can trust God, Daniel's God. Daniel's God is able to do these things. You can trust him, just as Daniel trusted him. God was in control of this situation from the start. He gave Nebuchadnezzar the dream. He gave Nebuchadnezzar the wisdom to know that the sorcerers wouldn't be able to help him. He gave Nebuchadnezzar the wisdom to know that these sorcerers were frauds and should be put to death if they couldn't meet this challenge. And then he brings Daniel along to show him, to show Nebuchadnezzar, yeah, I am God. Not these spirits you've been worshiping and all of your religious system is exalting. I am God. The God of the nation that you conquered, I placed you in a position where you could conquer them because I was dealing with my people, chastising them for turning their backs on me. I put you in the position you're in now. I am God. I raise up kings. I raised up you for my purposes. I take down kingdoms as I will take down yours. For my purposes, you will live as long as I want you to, and then you will die. I'm in control. God was going to show this to the king. He's going to use his faithful man Daniel to do it. You can trust this God to come through for you. Verse 24, "Therefore Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had assigned to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He came and said to him, 'Don't kill the wise men of Babylon.'" Look how merciful Daniel is. He's going to spare the lives of all these pagans who are against the true and living God, who are fraudulently speaking on behalf of false gods. Daniel's going to show God's mercy by sparing them, saying, "Don't do it. Don't destroy them. Don't kill the wise men of Babylon," he says. "Bring me before the king, and I will give him the interpretation." Daniel's going to allow the mercy that came to him for his protection through his God to become protection for all the pagans around him. That's the effect that you'll have on your culture and your community and your sphere of influence too. Mercies bestowed upon you by your God will be extended to improve the lives of others who don't know him, who don't call upon his name. Others will be protected and helped as you turn to your God and you follow him. Verse 26, "The king said in reply to Daniel, whose name to him was Belteshazzar, 'Are you able to tell me the dream I had and its interpretation?' Daniel answered the king." Listen here, this start of his answer points out the truth of what the false teachers had said about it being impossible. "Daniel answered the king, 'No wise man, medium, diviner, priest, or astrologer is able to make known to the king the mystery he asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has let King Nebuchadnezzar know what will happen in the last days. Your dream and the visions that came to your mind as you lay in bed were these. He then goes through what the king has dreamed, the image of the representation of all the different kingdoms that were going to reign over the earth, some of which have passed already, and one of which is to come perhaps very soon. He reveals what this statue in the dream means. I'm going to let you read through that and study through that for yourself, for time's sake, in this study that I'm doing right now. Verse 36, it goes down. This was the dream. Now we will tell the king its interpretation. Your Majesty, you are a king of kings. The God of heaven has given you sovereignty, power, strength, and glory. Wherever people live, or wild animals, or birds of the air, he has handed them over to you and made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold, meaning the first kingdom represented in the dream that I skipped over the verses of for time's sake right now. After you, there will rise another kingdom. And he goes on through the interpretation of the dream, down to verse 44, just for some summation. In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, and this kingdom will not be left to another people. It will crush all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, but will itself endure forever. This is the kingdom of God itself. And he's prophesying about that. This is God's closing to Nebuchadnezzar, that, yes, I will raise up these kingdoms. I'll tell you even in advance which they're going to be and what they're going to be like. And then, when it's all over, the kingdom of the Antichrist will be put down, and I will crush it like a stone crushes, and I will set up my own kingdom. But let's look at how the story ends here in Daniel's time. Verse 46, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell down, paid homage to Daniel, and gave orders to present an offering and incense to him. This is the king falling on the ground, bowing at the feet of his slave. Because that slave follows the true and living God. And the true and living God has been faithful to him. This king that had the power of the wise men's life in his hands is now bowing to one of them, paying homage to him and ordering that an offering be given to him. Verse 47, the king said to Daniel, "Your God is indeed God of gods, Lord of kings, and a revealer of mysteries, since you were able to reveal this mystery." Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many generous gifts. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and chief governor over all of the wise men of Babylon. At Daniel's request, the king also appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to manage the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court. Now Daniel's put in charge. You see, this pagan kingdom conquered the people of God in Israel because God wanted that to happen to deal with his people Israel. But now he's taken, exiled some of his faithful ones from the land, brought them in to the king's palace where they now will be reigning on his behalf. This conquering pagan kingdom will now be governed by a man of God who came from the conquered nation. And all the peoples of Babylon will have displayed for them this fact that the God of Israel, Yahweh, Jehovah, the great I Am, is God and the great King above all gods. That in his hands are the deep places of the earth. The heights of the hills are his also. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. So come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for He is our God, and we are the people of His pasture, and the flock under His care. You can afford to trust Daniel's God too, with whatever it is you're facing today, and whatever it is those around you are going through. You can point them to Him, and you can say, as Daniel said, yeah, this may be an impossible problem to solve in any worldly way, and this may be something that none of the religions of the world provide a solution to. But that which is impossible for all others is not even difficult for my God. I will trust in Him, and He will prevail, and I will find my place of honor because I relied on Him, because I humbled myself in the sight of the Lord. He will in due time lift me up. He's my glory and the lifter of my head, and I will trust in Him. Lord willing, we'll look at the next section of the book of Daniel in a study yet to come. May God be with you and bless you.